The presentation you're about to hear is a recording of the keynote address given by Greg Millett, Senior Policy Advisor in the Office of National AIDS Policy, on March 9, 2011, in Washington, D.C. This keynote was the opening presentation of a two-day summit organized by the California STD-HIV Prevention Training Center through a grant from the Centers for Disease Control. The purpose of the summit was to bring together leaders in the diffusion of evidence-based interventions, both researchers and community-based organizations, to discuss the challenges and possibilities for implementation of these interventions with African-American and Latino MSM.
This morning I want to talk to you about HIV prevention among African-American and Latino MSM, some of the challenges, the successes, as well as our opportunities. And before I begin, you know, the challenges that we have are really enormous. And I know that a lot of people in this room already know a lot of the data that's associated with HIV prevalence and incidence among African-American as well as Latino MSM. But it really bears repeating because it shows just how formidable HIV is in terms of an enemy that we really need to defeat within our communities. So unfortunately, HIV remains concentrated among gay and bisexual men in the United States. And when you take a look at the data from CDC and you take a look at those number of HIV/AIDS cases between 1994 and 2006, and this has actually been expanded through 2008, there's one thing that's really clear, and it's that the number of cases among men who have sex with men were consistently higher compared with all other risk groups in the United States from the very beginning of the epidemic through now. The other thing that's clear as well is that men who have sex with men are the only risk category in the United States where new HIV infections are increasing. New HIV infections are constant among heterosexuals. They're pretty much the same. They decrease quite a bit among injection drug users by about 80% since the mid-90s. But men who have sex with men are the only group where new infections are increasing. Also, when we talk about youth, the picture there is not too rosy either. It's really interesting when you hear people around the country talking about, well, we need to educate our youth, we need to educate our youth, and we need to do HIV prevention with youth. The thing is that not all youth are at high risk for HIV. There's specific youth who are at higher risk for HIV compared to others, and these are data, again, from CDC, where you can see really clearly that men who have sex with men account for the majority of youth who are becoming infected with HIV every year. So these are data from 2004 to 2007, but CDC just recently released data from 2008 showing exactly the same thing. So this disproportionate impact among gay and bisexual men in the United States is something that we had to write into the President's National HIV/AIDS Strategy. And even though gay and bisexual men only represent about 2% of the U.S. population, there are data from CDC saying that we're about 40 times more likely to become infected in our lifetime compared with heterosexuals in the United States. We account for half of the 1.1 million people who are living with HIV in the United States. And 53% of new infections each year are among gay and bisexual men. So you can see the impact is really high in this community. And when you take a look by race and ethnicity and number of new infections that take place each year, you find that gay and bisexual men of color, as well as white gay and bisexual men, are at highest risk for new infections. So no matter what race or ethnicity, gay and bisexual men are the primary number of new cases of infections each year in the United States. So among whites, it's gay and bisexual men have the highest number of cases. Among African Americans and Latinos, again, gay and bisexual men have the highest number of cases. And unfortunately, when you take a look at patterns of infection by age in the United States, you find that there are differences by race for men who have sex with men. So white men who have sex with men are more likely to become infected between the ages of 30 and 39. When you take a look at black and Latino men who have sex with men, we're more likely to become infected at much younger ages. We become infected between the ages of 13 and 29 in the United States. So of course that has implications for any type of HIV prevention interventions that we do, that we have to start early. We have to reach these men where they're young and try and prevent HIV in these populations. Now, I didn't want to just focus on gay and bisexual men. We also have a raging epidemic that's taking place among transgender communities in the United States. And I think we'd be remiss if we didn't at least say something about transgender communities. There's less data on HIV infection among transgender populations, but there are recent data from CDC estimates where they took all of the studies that have been done in transgender populations across the U.S., and they found really high rates among transgender populations, about a third who were infected. We're talking 30%. Within these surveys. It's a high number. There were lower rates for transgender men compared to transgender women, but there were still high enough rates among transgender populations overall. And it's very clear that we have to do more in terms of providing culturally relevant interventions for transgender populations. So unfortunately, there are other challenges other than just the ones that I just showed you today. There's also issues of undiagnosed HIV infection and how much they contribute to the racial and ethnic disparities that we see among Black and Latino men who have sex with men. Now, why this is important is because we already know that people who don't know their HIV status are responsible for most of the new infections that take place each year. And when you take a look at that by race and ethnicity among men who have sex with men, it's very clear that Black and Latino MSM have higher rates of undiagnosed HIV infection compared with white MSM. So of course that has bearing for the disparate rates that we see. And you don't have to look any further than the recent data that CDC released back in September, where they looked at HIV prevalence in the National HIV Behavioral Surveillance Survey in 21 cities. And no surprise, they found that HIV prevalence was highest among Black and Latino MSM compared with white MSM. But when they looked at the proportion of Black and Latino MSM with undiagnosed HIV infection in 21 cities, they found that half of Latino MSM practically did not know that they were HIV positive, of those who were diagnosed. And of Black MSM, nearly two-thirds of those who were diagnosed with HIV did not realize that they were HIV positive. So many people think that the reasons that we're finding some of these high rates of HIV among Black and Latino MSM is because we're engaging in high rates of risk behavior. From the very beginning of the epidemic, we were told that if you engage in lots of unprotected anal intercourse, if you have a lot of partners, if you engage in lots of substance use, you're more likely to become infected. But that doesn't really happen in Black and Latino MSM communities or Black and Latino communities overall. What you find is that Black and Latino MSM consistently report less risk behavior compared with white MSM in terms of injection drug use, in terms of uppers, powder cocaine, in terms of sex with partners, sex with HIV partners, or unprotected anal intercourse. But in this data set, even though Black and Latino MSM reported less risk compared with white MSM, Latino MSM were twice as likely to be diagnosed with HIV, and Black MSM were nine times more likely compared with white MSM to be diagnosed with HIV. So there's something that's happening in our communities that just can't be explained by risk behavior. And part of what's happening is the fact that we already have so many people who are in our communities who are living with HIV, and that influences infection rates that take place here. And I just wanted to take a look at that with a diagram that I have here where you look at white MSM, where there are higher rates of HIV infection, perhaps even higher than what I've illustrated here with the people who are red inside this slide. But when you take a look at Black and Latino MSM communities, you see that there are many more of us who are infected with HIV. And that has implications because anytime we have unprotected sex, even once, we're more likely to come into contact with somebody who's HIV positive in our communities compared with people in other communities who have fewer people who are HIV positive. And why this is important is because in some ways, when we focus just on risk behavior, there's a bit of blaming the victim. There's a bit of what are Black and Latino men doing that's wrong? That's why we're seeing such high rates of disparities in these communities. And that's not what's taking place. They're not doing anything wrong. We're not doing anything wrong. We're, in fact, engaging in less risk compared to men in other communities, but we're still more likely to become infected. So what we need to do is that we have to diagnose those positives in our communities. We have to link and keep and diagnose positives into care. And we have to reduce sexual risk among those people who are HIV positive. So essentially, we have to make all of the positives in our community less likely to transmit HIV. Other challenges that we have is that MSM of color are just not monolithic communities. There are a lot of differences in our communities. When you talk about Latino MSM, there's not just one group of Latino MSM. There are many different groups of Latino MSM. Same thing with Black MSM. We also have differences in risk behavior. When you take a look at methamphetamine use, you find that Black MSM on the East Coast are less likely to use methamphetamine compared to Black MSM on the West Coast. There's also differences in terms of Black MSM who say that they're mixed race versus Black MSM who say that they're not, where we find that Black MSM who are mixed race on several surveys are more likely to have HIV, they're more likely to engage in higher rates of risk behavior compared to Black MSM who say that they're not. With Latino MSM, there are issues of acculturation. We know that those Latino MSM who are emigrating from other countries are less likely to be HIV positive compared to those Latino MSM who were born here in the United States. And we also know that there are differences among Latino MSM by country of birth and how many report MSM behavior. So those Latino MSM from Puerto Rico are less likely to report being MSM compared to MSM who are born in other countries in the United States. So we're not a monolithic community. There's a lot of differences among us. And we have to make sure that we try and tailor some of our interventions to some of those differences. So what are some of the successes that we've had recently in terms of HIV prevention? Well, one of the successes, honestly, that we've had off the bat is that it's the first time that we have had more funding going to domestic HIV in the last 10 years. Quite frankly, there was a period for a while there where the domestic epidemic was just ignored. We spent a lot of time doing incredible work overseas, and it's great that we have done that type of work. But unfortunately, we've let the domestic epidemic languish. And in the last 2 years of this administration, there's been successive increases in funding for domestic HIV and really an emphasis on the domestic epidemic. Other successes that we've had is prevention with positives. We know now that there are not as many people who are living with HIV who are transmitting it to negative partners as they were at the beginning of the epidemic. So in 1984, there were about 44 people who were becoming infected each year per 100 people living with HIV. And by 2006, that was only 5 people becoming infected each year per 100 people living with HIV. So there's been enormous risk reduction among people living with HIV, a lot because of the efforts that y'all have been doing for the last several years. We also know that we have to reduce sexual risk, unfortunately, among people who are living with HIV, because even though there have been these enormous reductions, there's still about 25% of MSM of color living with HIV who engage in unprotected sex with HIV negative or unknown partners in the past 3 months. So that's something that we have to work on. Other successes is that there's a lot of news in terms of the erasing of the line between treatment and as well as HIV prevention in the US as well as internationally. And we know that in many ways, treatment is prevention. Those people who are HIV positive and they're in care are less likely to transmit HIV to their partners if they're on antiretroviral therapy and have undetectable viral load. And you find this really easily in some of the data that were presented in Denmark recently at the International AIDS Conference. Denmark, like the United States, has an epidemic that's primarily men who have sex with men. And what they found is that of the men who have sex with men in Denmark who are HIV positive, most of them were in care and most of them had undetectable viral load. They were on antiretroviral therapy. And over the years, they found that HIV incidence among men who have sex with men and HIV incidence in Denmark overall decreased. That has a lot of implications for our epidemic. If we're able to diagnose most of the men who have sex with men in our communities, get them into care, get their viral load undetectable, we could probably also see a decrease in our epidemic here. There's also issues in terms of pre-exposure prophylaxis. We know encouraging news from the IPREX study that was released last December showing that we can prevent HIV among negative men by providing medications to them. That a daily dose of Truvada was associated with a 40% reduction in HIV infection among HIV negative men who have sex with men. And those men who are more adherent to taking those pills every day, there was a 90% or more reduction in them becoming infected with HIV. Now, there are pros and cons with this. The pros is that this is honestly the most effective intervention that we have in reducing HIV among men who have sex with men. Up until this point, we haven't had anything that actually reduced infection, not just risk behavior, but infection among men who have sex with men. And we finally have this tool. The problem, though, is that many insurance companies are not going to pay for individuals to take Truvada who are HIV negative. This is very expensive medication, and we're not going to be able to give it to every person who wants it in among MSM communities. Other successes that we have is really looking at viral load. And many people in this room know that viral load is a marker of disease. So we know that people who have a higher viral load are more progressed in their disease. People who have a lower viral load are less progressed. We know that viral load is also associated with a greater likelihood of transmission. If you have a high viral load, you're more likely to transmit HIV to someone who's negative. If you have a low viral load, you're less likely. Some of the things that have been really fascinating coming out of San Francisco and Canada and other places recently is looking at community viral load, where you take a look at the average viral load of all people who are positive in a given region. And we know that community viral load is associated not only with HIV incidence, but it's associated with disparities. So for instance, in San Francisco, when they looked at community viral load, they found that people who were engaged in care had smaller community viral load compared to those who are not engaged in care. You also find that people who are not on antiretroviral therapy have a higher community viral load compared to those who don't. And not surprisingly, in terms of disparities, you find that blacks and Latinos had higher community viral loads in San Francisco compared to whites. Now, this has implications for HIV incidence. This has implications for transmission. So obviously, the people who are not in care are more likely to transmit to their partners, and that's where HIV incidence is going to be increasing. In black and Latino communities, the community viral load was higher. So those are people who are more infectious and are more likely to transmit to their partners. And it has implications on how we target HIV prevention interventions in this country. And this is just data to show that community viral load really is a reliable indicator of predicting HIV incidence. These are data from injection drug users in Canada, where they looked at community viral load among HIV-positive injection drug users. And they found that as more of those drug users were placed into care and were on antiretroviral therapy and were had a reduced viral load, that HIV incidence was also reduced. So this is something that we're hoping to follow as well in the United States. So what are some of the opportunities that we have now? There's quite a few, and the one that I talked about beforehand was the National HIV/AIDS Strategy. It's the first time 30 years into the epidemic where we actually have a plan, we actually have a roadmap on how we reduce HIV infection in specific communities. It's been amazing that for 30 years, with all of the great work that we've all been doing, we haven't really been doing anything that's been a coordinated approach at the federal level. We haven't been doing a coordinated approach at the state or the local level. We've just been doing a lot of different things. But a lot of those different things are not necessarily making the impact that we need, as you can see with the higher rates of HIV infection among men who have sex with men. And what's remarkable about the National HIV/AIDS Strategy is it's the first time that a White House document not only acknowledged the domestic HIV epidemic in such a comprehensive way, but acknowledged how much of an impact that epidemic is making, not only in minority communities, but particularly among men who have sex with men and transgender communities. I can't underscore how big this is for a president to really talk openly about MSM as well as transgender communities and how much we need to target those communities. The National HIV/AIDS Strategy also makes gay and bisexual men a priority population. So the strategy says that the United States can't reduce the number of HIV infections nationally without better addressing HIV among gay and bisexual men. And as you saw from the data from Denmark, that's true. If we don't affect what's taking place among men who have sex with men, we're still going to see rising incidence in this country. Men who have sex with men are the group that's most impacted in this country, and if we don't do anything with them, then the HIV rates are going to essentially remain the same. And we know that CDC is changing its response to the epidemic by the National HIV/AIDS Strategy. So some of the things that CDC is doing with the eCHIP program is combining both effective behavioral as well as biomedical strategies to reduce HIV infection. That's perhaps some of the best ways that we know to really reduce HIV. But we also know that some of the strategies that we have in terms of behavioral and biomedical interventions are not going to be the same. So what we have for black heterosexual women is not going to be the same strategies that we use for Latino MSM. So we really need to figure out exactly what those things need to be. We have to distinguish among which Debbies are effective in real world settings. There are some fantastic Debbies that are out there, but some of them are really fantastic only in a clinical setting. Some of them are only fantastic when the researchers did them in a controlled environment. But when you bring them into the real world, things kind of fall apart a little bit, and it's not as easy to do them. So CDC is in the process right now of distinguishing which Debbies are ones that translate the best for real world settings that could also make an impact to the populations at highest risk. We also know that there are a lot of things that communities are doing that are fantastic. There are things that communities are doing that might be able to curb the epidemic. And we haven't been doing a good enough job of recognizing those things or evaluating them. So CDC is also in the process of taking a look at what things community organizations are doing and evaluating them to see if they can also be among some of the effective interventions that we have. And this is important because when you take a look at interventions, particularly interventions for Latino MSM, we don't have an effective Debbie for Latino MSM. There's nothing that's there. We don't have an effective Debbie either for transgender populations. So it's important to have things that are homegrown, things that are from the community, evaluated from the community, that bubbles up, that could be an HIV prevention activity that we can use. CDC is also focusing on really the social and cultural drivers of the HIV epidemic. A lot of you heard about that study that CDC had finding that poverty was a primary risk factor for HIV among heterosexual minority populations in urban settings. We need to be doing more of that research. We know that from the data that I showed you beforehand, if we just focus on behavior, we're missing a whole lot of things that are affecting HIV disparities among Black and Latino MSM. We need to take a look at stigma. We need to take a look at discrimination, both racism as well as homophobia. We need to take a look at many other issues that are impacting HIV in these communities, and CDC is committed to moving forward with looking at those types of drivers. There's also potential expanded roles for CBOs as we move forward with implementing the National HIV/AIDS Strategy. So it's not just focusing, as I said beforehand, on risk behavior and some of these DEVIs. We need to make sure that CBOs are accessing some of the high-risk communities for targeted testing. One of the remarkable things that you do every day is that many of the men that you see will never go to a health department. Many of the men that you see would never come out to their healthcare providers. And it's so important to have CBOs who are there because they have unique capabilities to reach some of the highest risk MSM in their communities. And we need to make sure that some of those CBOs are doing targeted testing with these MSM. We also need immediate linkage to care for those individuals who are diagnosed positive. As I told you beforehand, there's too many of us, Black and Latino MSM, who don't know that they were HIV positive. And we need to make sure that some of the CBOs are doing as much of a job as testing some of these men as possible, getting them diagnosed and linked to care in a timely fashion. We also need behavioral risk reduction interventions for HIV-positive Black and Latino MSM. Even though many of us who are living with HIV are not engaging in higher rates of risk behavior with our partners who are negative or unknown status, there's still some men who are. And for those men who are, we really need our CBOs to implement those DEBIs and risk reduction strategies to reduce transmission risk in these communities. We also have to keep HIV-positive Black and Latino MSM in continuous care. We need support groups for medication adherence. We need to assign buddies for those MSM who are newly diagnosed and in care, because we know that those individuals who are diagnosed and not necessarily linked to care, it's associated with poor outcomes. Those men are not only more likely to present later on with progression in their disease, but they're also more likely to transmit HIV to their partners. And there's actually a recent study that was looking at virologic failure. This is failure of drugs among Black and Latino communities. And we find overall that Black and Latino communities usually fail more so than white communities on many of the drugs that are available for people who are living with HIV. But one thing that they found that was associated with this drug failure were Black and Latino communities missing appointments to go to for their visits for their HIV. So it's very clear that, you know, some of these wraparound services that we have for people living with HIV, some of the things that community-based organizations can do and making sure that we get people to the care that they need and stay in the care they need is something that might help us out in reducing disparities. There's also issues of social marketing campaigns that address stigma. Even though we are at higher risk for HIV in our communities, Black and Latino MSM and Black and Latino communities overall have higher rates of really believing that HIV is a genocidal plot, that HIV is a man-made disease, that HIV has a cure and it's not being provided to Black and Latino communities. And these things have consequences because we know that people who have these beliefs are less likely to get tested, they're less likely to be on medication if they're HIV positive, and they're less likely to adhere to their medication if they're HIV positive. And these are just data here from some colleagues of mine from CDC where they're just looking at these types of beliefs among Black and Latino MSM compared with white MSM. And you can see really clearly that Black and Latino MSM were more likely to have these conspiracy beliefs compared with white MSM. So it's important for our CBO partners to really reach out and do some sort of social marketing to deal with some of these specific issues of stigma and mistrust within our communities. We also know that we can't do this alone, that we're going to have to re-engage the wider LGBT community. It's kind of a shame that 30 years into the epidemic that we started with this robust action from the GLBT community against HIV. I remember in the 80s and 90s when I was growing up in New York City and being a part of ACT UP New York, that the whole GLBT community was engaged in HIV prevention. That's not the case anymore. In many ways, you know, we've just become really tired of talking about HIV in our communities. And we've moved on to, you know, marriage. We've moved on to gays in the military. We've moved on to many other issues that are legitimate issues. But the problem is that when you see the infection rates that we have among Black and Latino MSM, those issues also need to be addressed. And we need to re-engage GLBT leaders into what's taking place in our communities. And HHS, as well as the White House, is holding a summit next week to re-engage some of the larger GLBT community, HRC and many other communities, to really let them know, you know, HIV hasn't gone away. It's still affecting men who have sex with men, irrespective of race and ethnicity. And last, I just wanted to thank you for the work that you've been doing. You know, working in HIV is not easy. I know many of you have been doing it for many years, and many times you feel like you're not being recognized enough, that we're not necessarily making an impact. But I'm here to let you know that we are making an impact, and that there's a lot that we're doing that is preventing HIV among Black and Latino MSM. And with the National HIV AIDS Strategy, there's going to be an opportunity for us to do more to actually prevent HIV among Black and Latino MSM communities. And with that, I just wanted to close with a picture of us the day that the strategy was released. It was our office, as well as the Presidential Advisory Council on HIV/AIDS, with the President and the First Lady, as well as Dr. Biden. They're not in this picture, but in others. But it really was a joyous day. It was the first time that I've been working in HIV domestically where I really had hope that we are going to finally alter the course of this epidemic in our communities, where we're finally going to talk about the disproportionate impact that's taking place among Black and Latino MSM. And with your work and with your help, I'm hoping that as we move forward with implementing the strategy, that we're really going to make that impact. So thank you for the ability to speak today.